Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about advice. And did you notice that in the little explanation of what we're talking about, we use the word graciously? Yes? Graciously accept and receive advice? Yes, because, of course, sometimes people give us, well, unsolicited advice, and we must be gracious in accepting it. Now, accepting does not mean that we take it, right, that we do it, but that we listen and we think about it, and that we tell them that we have listened and we are thinking about it, right, yes, and then we actually do so, and the same when we give advice. Now, we try to give advice in a gracious manner, right? Yes. I mean, we're never rude, but sometimes advice is, well, something that you think somebody is doing not so correctly, perhaps, right? And therefore, even if the recipient of our advice is, well, not as good as we are and is less than gracious, we must remain gracious also and explain that it was given in the spirit of helping and not as a criticism, right? Right. Yes. Yes, so the word gracious comes in at all times. So within that context, within our context of a mediation, a dispute resolution, a negotiation, a consensus building, even a workshop and a seminar. You know, after workshops and seminars, actually during them also, that we have a Recipe for Peace Now always has a way of making suggestions, right? Yes. And we do indeed take them into careful consideration because sometimes it's something immediate that we really need to fix. A lot of times that immediacy has something to do, and we would like to know because obviously we don't realize it, has something to do with the facility that we're holding it in, right? Because we go all around the world, really, and have workshops and seminars, and sometimes the audience, the participants, the people who are, depending on how big it is, sometimes it's a whole theater full, a whole bunch of people sitting in kind of like a theater, really, in a theater atmosphere. And it's a teaching, a lecture, a classroom. And a classroom is also quite a few people. Or it might be even a smaller group where we're having an interactive participation. We might be practicing, for example, our smaller group skills. And doing kind of real life. And a lot of times the suggestions, especially the first day, if it's a multi-day, or the first hour, you know what I mean, right away, have to do with the facilities themselves, and we'd like to know it, because that needs to be fixed right now, this instant, so that we have a more convivial atmosphere. Yeah. people go, what does that mean? For example, sometimes the audiovisual, we can see the visual, right? Well, maybe not. Maybe in the back of the room they can't. And we don't realize it because it's not bright enough or big enough. Or it's somehow blurring, right? And we just don't realize it because we're too close. The audio, sometimes it's hard to know. Sometimes there's something wrong with the facility that we've rented for the event. And we'd like to know that, too, right away, so we can call somebody and get it fixed. Just recently, We were doing an event in a place that we'd never really been before. And we had the suggestion box, so to speak. You know, there's a place where you can type in an instant message, a message to tell us something right away. Mm-hmm. Boy, you do the questions, for example, yeah. And somebody really reads them. Yeah. The bathrooms were locked. It was like, you know, the bathrooms are locked and nobody's got the key. Well, you know, that's something we'd really like to know, right? Right. Yeah. Because, well, that's not a very convivial atmosphere if the bathrooms are locked. Right. So you want to know these things. And you want to be able to give you advice and comments and like that. And you want to take them into consideration. I always think that if you get the same comment, the same piece of advice, really, basically speaking the same more than once or twice, you got to really think on it. Because it's probably a good point that you didn't realize. Yeah. So I take all of us take these things really seriously, because sometimes people are just kind of cranky. But sometimes people have something actual to say, something important to say. Yeah. So let's start off with one of our usual questions to get us started and to see where we're going with this conversation, because of course it's not scripted. We just take it where we take it. Mm-hmm. So within our context, the context of a negotiation, a dispute resolution, a consensus building, a workshop, a seminar, whatever it is that we're doing, where we're getting to have participants and we're getting them together for the common good, the common goal, within that context, what kind of advice do we usually give and probably receive also? What kind of advice do we usually see? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of advice do we get? Well, for the giving part, and maybe for the receiving also, because it's always nice to get a compliment. At the end, we do an assessment, at the end of workshops and seminars, not so much the actual negotiation, but you get feedback, too, from the person that brought you in, who says that, wow, everybody was really pleased, right? I'm going to call this confidence building, right? Yeah, confidence building advice and feedback. That was really good. That particular part was really good. I like the way you did this. Yes, confidence building. Mm-hmm. I think the second part we're going to talk about, which is the gracious part that we just talked about a little bit, is the civility rules. A lot of you are talking about them. And advice concerning the civility rules and how to create like a workable group dynamic. Because that's what the civilities really do. They create a workable group dynamic. Mm-hmm. What other kind of advice? I'm going to call listening advice the next ones. How about listen first before we speak? That's good advice. Yes, we're going to go. I think there's going to be a second one, too, about listening with empathy, right? Because you can listen first, but you got to do it with some empathy also. And remember, empathy is understanding, not agreement. Empathy is understanding, not agreement. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got quite a few people talking about thinking before you speak and send. You know, it's easy to click send, right? And really before you change position, which is what that is. Yeah. Thinking before you change position. Mm-hmm. Can we have a sixth one? I think we might have time. It's going to go into the fifth one, I think, in all truth and honesty. Where we think before speaking and sending and changing our position. A lot of people are talking about advice about not reacting in haste or in anger, right? Not reacting in haste or in anger. Yeah. So let's get started with the confidence building one. Because that's really good advice the best advice of all is to be confidence building in your participants and in your colleagues and in your families. I mean, just in your lives, right? Yeah. Advice that is confidence building. Tanya and others are saying you need to be generous with praise for effort and a job well done. Generous with praise for effort and a job well done. Yes, especially the effort part, because sometimes people have put in a lot of work, and when they got all done with it, they found out, really, because they put in the work and the research and the effort, they found out that it really wasn't the thing to do, that it's not the right path, that it's not going to work. Yeah. And that's always kind of annoying. We all know that. When you've put in a lot of effort and it's like, oh, the conclusion is no. After all that time and effort and thinking and like that, oh, wow, that's not quite it. Phooey, yeah. So you need to be generous with your praise for that. Be generous with praise for effort. And be generous with praise for an advice on going forward, right? Gracious advice on, wow, that was really important to find out. Wow, you kept us from really, really going down the wrong path and really doing something that wasn't going to work. Let's think about what's going to work. Let's get some advice on that, right? Yeah, and then praise and advice and generosity when it works, especially. You see, because it is. It's kind of. I mean, we all know that not everything works, but we kind of hope that the thing that we've put that much effort into really will, and sometimes not so much. Yeah. Glenn and others are saying what I always say and what I do at the end of this program every week, don't I? Say thank you. Yeah, say thank you. Thank you for your effort. Can I, let's talk about where to go next, because that's the advice part, right? Yeah, but advice always goes better with a thank you. It really does. Yes. Thank you, and then some up and back about what's coming next, which is advice. Yes. Thank you. Afterwards, too, is fine, too. Yeah. Say thank you. Yeah. This is a good point, too, that Danielle and others are making, that you need to celebrate every success to remember how much has already been accomplished. We're big on that at Recipe for Peace now. I do in my own practice, too. We celebrate every success to remember how much has been accomplished, as Danielle says. And the reason for it is exactly that. We've had advice, we've gone forward, and as humans, we kind of forget how far we've come, right? We kind of forget how far we've come, how much has already been accomplished. It seems like, oh my God, this is getting us nowhere fast. Yeah, it's a lot of times it seems that way, doesn't it? But the answer is no, that's not really true. We're doing just fine. We are getting someplace, somewhere fast. It's just that it's taken a little more time than we thought. There's nothing wrong with that. That is the way of the world. Sometimes you get into something and it's taken a little longer. It's going a little slower. The participants are a little bit, more in need of advice than some groups. Sometimes that happens, right? We might have had to call in an expert, pardon me, to give expert advice. We need to know that we're getting somewhere. Yeah, people go for timeline. You can if you'd like. I prefer the treats theory, where we all have a little celebration and go, you know, we've reached another goal. We've reached another milestone. We're getting there, right? You can also put that on a timeline, yeah? The reason I always balk at timelines, and you folks, lots of you have been here before, thank you all for being here and for all of your participation. I see there's a whole bunch of you. Thank you so much for being here. The reason I balk at a timeline, and you guys know that I kind of do, is I think the original preparation, if you're going to do an actual timeline, is time-consuming, and usually the dates are kind of arbitrary, unless, and then you do need a timeline, you've got actual deadlines that need to not be ignored and need to be accommodated. Something needs to get on a ballot by a certain time, not artificial dates by which you have to do something, but real dates, as in this is necessary, this is now. Yeah. Because if you don't, and they're arbitrary, pardon me, and you blow them, and you haven't made them, that's kind of discouraging in and of itself. Yeah. So my advice is to celebrate each step, each success, so that you remember how far you've come. Maybe make a timeline in the sense of a tick-off list, where you put the thing that you've already accomplished down and go, done. Look how many things we've done. That's a good thing because it's visual. My advice is not to do an actual arbitrary timeline. We're going to be done by this date, unless those dates are not arbitrary and you must meet them. Yeah, that's the ticket. That's the trick. Mm-hmm. So say thank you, celebrate. You know, Muhammad's making a good point, too, on advice and confidence building. Mm-hmm. Muhammad says you have to reach beyond comfort zones. I like it. You reach beyond comfort zones because that's where your advice has taken you. And we have the confidence to go forward, even though, well, we've never done it before. Maybe it's never been done. We have to make some new connections. We have to go get some advice, right? Yeah. A lot of times people balk at getting professional. They balk at getting expert advice. The reason being is that they're not certain that they want to do it, I think. And that's a real valid reason, but it's no reason not to do it. It's just beyond your comfort zone, right? Right. Or sometimes the expert is someone who is beyond some of the group's comfort zones as an expert. Mm-hmm. Has a completely different opinion of some sort, for example. That happens. And it is a valid point, but it is not a reason not to get an expert in. It is a reason to listen and to talk about who we're going to call in, why, and how we're going to use the advice once we hear it, right? First, you got to hear it, though. That's the key to it. Because a lot of times you've got people that don't want to listen, and they don't want to go beyond their comfort zone, and their comfort zone is narrow. Most of our comfort zones are kind of surprisingly narrow, in all truth and honesty, I think. But sometimes people have particularly narrow ones. And that's the kind where you have to really, really think about it and really go, you know, we're going to take this advice. We're going to seek out different opinions, different advisors, right? And then we're going to see what we think about all of it as a compilation of advice, right? Yeah. But it's going to take us beyond our comfort zone. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize this. This is true. Comfort zone is kind of an Americanism. It's a little phrase, I guess. It means that if you're doing something that is not your usual, right? We feel comfortable doing what we understand, what we've done before, what perhaps our group has done before, our culture, right? We feel comfortable in doing those things because we understand them. We've done it before. We understand the rules, really, is what it really is. And sometimes, and that's your comfort zone. We understand this. Sometimes you go outside of that because you've had to really think up something new. Whatever it is that you've been doing all this time, it's perfectly fine, but it's really not quite it. It's really not quite getting to the basis, not quite making it to the finish line over there. You're going to have to do something else. And that's going outside your comfort zone, right? Your comfort zone is what you've always done. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to go outside of your comfort zone. I understand that. We all understand that because we've all done it. And we've all had the issue, right? Yeah. To really go outside your comfort zone and really, really think about it. Really, really consider what needs to be done. Really think. Yeah, people are saying think outside the box. That's probably also an Americanism, but it's probably been translated into every language that all of us speak, right? Yeah. Think differently. Think of new solutions. Go outside your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is a good point, too. Suki says that one of the things when you're giving confidence-building advice is to understand that everyone has some role to play, and it's of value. Understand that everyone has some role to play, and that it's of value, right? Yeah. So we want to build confidence in ourselves as leaders. And a lot of times that has to do with taking advice from other leaders, right? Mm-hmm. From respected peers, from experts, from our participants who are indeed judging us as we judge them, right? It's a human thing. Mm-hmm. And everyone has some role to play. And we're going to figure out what it is, and they're going to contribute. They're going to do it to the best of their ability. Right? Right. Now let's move on to the next topic of advice, area of advice, because we're going to run out of time. I know a lot of times we run out of time for the recipes, and I apologize in advance if we do that here. The next one's talking about the civility rules, mm-hmm. and advice on how to create a workable group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. Thomas and others are saying that you cannot accept or give advice if you are stressed by incivility. You cannot accept or give advice if you are stressed by incivility. Yes, if you're constantly fighting, if you're constantly being non-civil to each other, how can you think? How can you give advice and be encouraging and like that and build confidence? No, we're going to enforce the civility rules. Yes. Yeah, Jocelyn says you cannot listen if you're on the attack or on the offensive. You cannot listen if you're on the attack or on the offensive. Now, what are the civility rules? I know a lot of you have been here before, and thank you so much for coming back. Welcome. Welcome to everybody. The civility rules are the only rules the Recipe for Peace now actually has. Pardon me, I'm going to take a little sip of water here. The civility rules basically say we will not be rude to each other. Pardon me. We will not be rude to each other. We will not interrupt when someone else is speaking. We will take turns speaking. In fact, we've done whole shows archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. We've actually done whole shows on the civility rules and on how we're going to take turns and everybody's going to speak and give their opinion and their advice, really, too. We're going to solicit advice from everyone in the room. Everybody's going to have a fair amount of time to talk, and nobody will interrupt. And then we'll have a rebuttal. I mean, you can raise your hand and talk again. But you can't just bully anyone or not let someone else participate, not let them speak, right? Right. Also, the civility rules apply to body language, apply to personal handheld devices, right? Apply to rolling of the eyes and making noises, all of that stuff that we know is uncivil. Because we need a civil working environment so that we can have a successful group dynamic. Yes, it is true. You can't listen and think if you're always on the offensive or always on the defensive, as Jocelyn says. Yes, very important. Mm-hmm. The civility rules need to be enforced in a way that come before advice, even, because you can't get advice if everybody's being uncivil. Mm-hmm. And saying something in a rude manner is not qualify as advice. No, because remember our word gracious. Mm-hmm. So civility rules need to be enforced. They need to be enforced by the leader immediately. Don't wait until things get out of hand. It's too late. You need to enforce immediately, consistently, as in always, and fairly, so that you haven't taken a side, right? Right. Civility rules cross all lines, and they're very, very important, or you can't graciously accept to receive advice. And this is, accept to give advice. This is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Also, the most important piece of advice that I can give, and you know in your heart that this is true, and you give this advice to other leaders, right, when they ask for your opinions, the most important thing about the civility rules is that the leader is always a good example. The leader is a good example. We are a shining example of the civility rules. Always. You cannot enforce rules that you do not follow yourself. We, as leaders, are examples of the civility rules. Mm-hmm. Very important. Very important to remember that you are the shining example, right? Yes. And that you will not lower yourself to, in some way, acting in an uncivil manner. Mm-hmm. Because we want to show what civility is so it can be modeled. And you'd be surprised if you insist on it and you subscribe to the rule yourself. And remember, too, you will get a very good group dynamic from the most diverse people you've ever seen. Sometimes you walk in on a group. A lot of times I'm called in when things have kind of gone a little sideways, right? Yeah. There's a lot of contention. There is some difficulty with the group itself. The leadership has not been all that stellar. And it is very important to establish the civility rules and establish that everyone will follow them. Right? Me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if you're following them, and then you'll get civil discourse. You'll get consensus building. It'll come, but first you need to establish that we're going to act in a civil manner towards each other, even though we are very, very diverse in opinions. Mm-hmm. Yes. Which leads us to our next area of advice, our next area of need. Mm-hmm. And the advice to listen first before speaking. Listen first before speaking, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. Kieran and others are saying it's a great life rule, not just for group dynamics. Yeah, it's a great life rule. Always think before you speak. Because what you think is private. And we are human beings too, sometimes as leader. We think that one side, one suggestion, one area of advice, one person maybe, is really right. I mean, we think that in our head. But we don't come out and say it because we're the third party impartial and we're working it around to that person's point of view, probably, and giving advice and thinking about the path. And maybe as we go along, everybody's viewpoint gets modified, even the one that we thought was really kind of right. Because we worked, we talked about it, we listened before speaking, and like that. But look, if you say it out loud, then you have impacted the group dynamic. What you think is private. Listen and think before you speak, right? Yeah, listen first before speaking. And also let people finish their sentences. Because you never know what kind of a conclusion they're drawing until you listen to their conclusion. Because what they say may appear to you to have a completely different meaning than it appears to them. Yeah, isn't that weird? But true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great life rule. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is true too. Hira and others are saying you not only listen and think, but you listen and think about your response before speaking. So that you've got it together. Yeah, especially if you're giving advice, right? So that what you're saying really has impact. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hussein is making a good point. A lot of people are that you think and pause before any response, not just verbal. Think and pause before any response, not just verbal. I must confess that I see people just, I see this with clients, I see it with, especially with the people that I deal with in business. Okay, I'm going to say something that's kind of a preconceived notion. And it may not, it's not true across the board because, of course, preconceived notions are kind of stereotypes. But it has become kind of a habit of a lot of people to use their handheld device. I would call them a phone, but really they're barely a phone anymore. They're really handheld computers, right? A tablet, a phone, whatever's in your pocket, to make comments and to put stuff in writing, because making comments on your phone is in writing, right, on your device, that will last forever because it's the internet and you have sent it as a text, as some sort of a message, as an email, but you sent it off as you were sitting someplace right after you read something or heard something, right? Truly kind of shocking. It's advice and opinions and statements that can be truly taken in an inflammatory manner. Because they were dashed off and hit send without really thinking about the consequences and without reading it, without rereading it. For heaven's sakes, at least take the time to reread what you have written down before you hit send. Right? Yeah, it'll only take you a second. If you wrote something that long, you probably shouldn't have. Not on the spur of the moment, at least. Reread it. Maybe this is my little obsession. I don't know if it's true or not. This is my personality. But when I see something sent to me that is full of misspellings, and not so much misspellings nowadays because the computer corrects it, right? Because it would be, I mean, it would look ridiculous, but computers don't catch the wrong roots of a word, like there, as in go over there, but spell T-H-E-I-R. Please, people, read what it is that you're sending. It indicates to me that you're not careful, that I guess it's because I'm a lawyer and I think about the meaning of words. You're not being careful. You're being rushed, I guess. But still, And before you hit send on something that is inflammatory in some way or rude advice or a rude opinion, or an opinion at all, come to think of it, pause for a minute before you hit send, right? Yeah. And I'm going to skip down to our last topic because it comes in right here, right? Because it's never send anything or do anything in haste or in anger. Haste or in anger, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, in the olden days, which I kind of remember, but a lot of my peers do not, because they're younger than I am. The younger generation never paused for a communication. They always got it right in their hand, right? But the response is in writing, people. Don't write something you wouldn't say, for heaven's sakes. That's the first rule. Never do it in haste. You need to be able to reread it and think about how the recipient will see that. I delete a lot of stuff, because not because it was rude, but because I say to myself, I'm not certain on the written page, unlike language, which has inflection to your voice, I'm not certain how that's going to be look. I'm not certain how it's going to be taken, right? That's important to know, too. And you need to pause for a second. Now, in the olden days, we got used to doing that, because you had to either write a letter. No, I didn't use a quill pen. But you had to write a letter, or you had to use the telephone. There was no other way. I mean, a telegram or something crazy. But, yeah. And that's why, and I thought about, somebody said this to me, and I thought, wow, because I took a history class. I thought, wow, it's like a lecture. I thought, wow, you know, that's a good point. That people, historical figures, it was a lecture on the founding fathers of the United States with the Declaration of Independence and the whole thing, that historical figures seem much wiser than regular people nowadays. And they were just kind of regular people. I mean, they were exceptional in the sense that they had a vision, but they were businessmen and lawyers and stuff like that, good things. And they seem like they were really very wise, and you read historical letters and things like, wow, look at that. But it's really because they were using a pen. They were using a piece of paper. They had time to sleep on it because the post didn't come every single minute. It had to be posted and sent, right? Yeah. And there was time for revision. Mm-hmm, yeah. And like that before it was sent. Think about your communications, especially your business ones, but also your personal ones, like letters. Mm-hmm. Never in haste or in anger. Thank you. Yes, a lot of people are adding never drunk. If you've been drinking, don't send anything because your judgment is impaired, right? Yes, never impaired, shall we call it. Mm-hmm. Don't send it yet. Lay it aside for a minute and think about it and then reread it from the eyes of the recipient. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's no haste, no anger, no impairment. Listen first to what other people have said. Read everything carefully. And then respond in a considered manner. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. And taking into account the ramifications. Mm-hmm. The next one's going to be, oops, we may run out of time, advice to listen with empathy, right? Read and like that with empathy, too. It's not just for listening with your ears, but listening with your mind, really. So you need to listen with empathy and give advice in that same way after you've listened with empathy. Remember that empathy is not agreement. It is understanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not agreement necessarily. It's understanding. I understand why you have that opinion. Yeah? Yeah, understanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is a good point. A lot of you are saying this, and it's a very good point, Melissa and others. And thank you, because it makes me feel good, because it means that you've listened, that we're going to break out to have empathy. Let's break out the 5W questions. Yeah. So that we can understand why someone has that opinion, why somebody did something that they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. So that we get an understanding of the basis for what it is that we're looking at. Listen with empathy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's a good point Conrad and others are making, that participants also need to have empathy for the leader. Mm-hmm. Yes, because we're not perfect, but we are good examples. Because we put a lot of sincere, deliberate thought into being good examples. And that's really the basis, sincere, deliberate thought into being the good example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Saeed and others are making that you also have the participants need empathy for each other. It makes a circle. Everybody has to listen with empathy. And the 5W questions are important to get down to the reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that we can have empathy, so we can have understanding. Because in order to have understanding, you have to know the reason for something. Mm-hmm. Yes. Empathy for someone. You know, a lot of people are saying this, that it's understanding of the other, as Pat puts it in parenthesis, in the quotation marks, so that you can work together and accomplish common goals. Understanding of the other, in quotation marks, so you can work together and accomplish common goals. Mm-hmm. Understanding all the way around. Understanding of why it is that you've got that opinion. Why it is that you've reacted this way. Yeah? Sometimes people have a real surprise reaction. Surprises everybody. Right? Yeah, it's a good point that there's several chapters on that in the workbook where people are really, they don't realize something because the 5W questions haven't been asked. And it is really a surprise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an exercise. Barbara says it's an exercise in setting aside preconceived notions. And when we have asked the 5W questions and we have empathy, which is understanding, we're capable of giving advice as to how we should proceed because we've got some background and we know what people can do, how they can react, right? Yes. How should we proceed is the question. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need the advice for. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the haste and anger one, which was our last one. I think that the main advice, that's a good question. A lot of times when we talk about the 5W questions, I get some questions about how are they asked. The answer is you as leader kind of lead that. You want to ask them in a non-accusatory manner. Not how can you possibly think that, you fool, but how did you arrive at that conclusion, right? Yeah. It's said in a tone of voice that's level. Even if you feel a little annoyed, remember that the leader is always a good example of listening, uh-huh, and a good example of self-control. We just had a beeping noise. I hope we haven't gone off somehow. Mm-hmm. Yes, we beeped. And a good example of what needs to be done, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And do you guys hear a beeping noise? Kind of a continued beeping noise? My goodness, the equipment seems funny. Oh, well, we'll find out. It's kind of like, well, we can't stop now. We're recording. Hello, it's a live show. They're not all asked at the same time. I mean, the information is elicited, right? Depends on If you're asking in front of the group, if you're asking privately during one of the breaks, during one of the food breaks that we're just going to talk about in 1 second, because I think I've left enough time. But it's a question of what's needed at the moment as to which W question to break out. Eventually, hopefully, you'll get to all of them, and we'll know lots of things. But yeah, it is not to be done in the same moment. It is to be done gradually so that we understand where this advice is coming from. Mm-hmm. Yes. Remember, of course, that we are always the good example. Mm-hmm. And really, as Claire says, the main thing is to see each other as people, not as stereotypes, right? Right. And in order to do that and be able to really take and give really valuable, really useful advice, we're going to need to get to know each other a little bit better, right? And make more of a team, make more of an effort to really understand each other. And one of the ways the Recipe for Peace Now does indeed advocate, and that we really do, I do it in my real life in my practice also. I do meet a lot of business mediation with multinationals, so all kinds of different people in the room, and maybe even different levels of employment, right? Mm-hmm. And we actually break bread together. Yes, we have food. And if you're going to have food, because it's good in the room, it smells delicious, it gives you something to talk about, you're not going to argue with, right? It gives us a chance to have a time out. If things might be getting a little uncivil, sometimes that happens. And we actually have like a potluck. Mm-hmm. It could be catered. But if you're going to do that and make the food a tool, you might be hungry also, but it's really a tool to get people to come together, to do something that they're not going to argue about. If you're going to do that, and you are, you're going to need to take a survey beforehand to find out if anybody is allergic to anything, anybody needs to have some sort of special food, mm-hmm. something they can't eat, some sort of religious prohibition, right? You disseminate that information. You don't want anybody to have a bad time, to not have a convivial good time, right? Right. And you're going to ask people when they come with the food to actually come with what it is, not what it's called, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down the list and see if it's something I can eat, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So, also, I think that you should have at least one safe recipe. That's something everybody for sure can eat because you took the survey. And also something that generally people in your area would have eaten before. They'd be familiar with the ingredients and not get a surprise that they can't eat them. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to do the safe recipe. I think we've only got time for one. Maybe we'll get two in. Let's do the safe recipe first, because chicken cacciatore has been on the we're about to talk about it list for quite a while. Yeah, it keeps getting pushed back. So let's do the chicken cacciatore, which is our safe recipe. We, of course, have taken the survey, and we know that people can eat tomatoes and things like that. Right? Right. This is a baked one. I like it very much. I like to cut the chicken into kind of small serving pieces so that people can take three if they'd like, or they can take and taste it, right? Yeah. So we're going to use about a dozen skinless, boneless chicken thighs. And let's do chicken breast, actually, because it doesn't have – it's chicken thighs if people are going to give people one, and it's kind of a entree size because they're kind of softer, which is nice. I'm going to use chicken breast if it's boneless, skinless chicken breast, if it is something that I'm going to make strips. You can also take the meat off of the thighs, too, if you want, but it makes kind of like chunks more. So it's a matter of – opinion as to whether or not everybody's going to get their own bigger piece, which would be the thigh, or you're going to make kind of chunks or strips, right? Right. It depends on your group. In any event, we're going to use about a dozen of them. I'm heading for about 3 pounds. You make it bigger, depending, and you add some more stuff, depending on how many people you've got. Let's have a nice tablespoon of olive oil. Let's have have a teaspoon of dried oregano, nice crushed oregano, because it makes it nice and Italian tasting. 3 cups of sliced fresh mushrooms. Make sure everybody can eat mushrooms, right? Do not, you know how I oftentimes use cans? And I think it's just fine because it's a shortcut. And if you use fresh, yours will be more delicious than mine. But really, mine's quite delicious. Mushrooms is one of those things you shouldn't use out of a can or a jar. They're funny. They've got a funny consistency. They don't taste like anything. And they don't look well in your product. Yeah. I don't know about dried ones. I don't use them very much. I know they need to be soaked. But use fresh ones for this. Just take my word for it. Let's have a nice green pepper, which we're going to cut into strips, if we've got the chicken in strips especially, and chunks if you like the looks better. You know, you core it, devein it, de-seed it like that, yes. We're going to do the same thing to a nice red pepper. If you like a lot of pepper, you can add an orange one. I think 2 is enough of different tastes. Let's have a nice sweet onion that we're going to chop up. I'm going to use condensed tomato soup. I know, you can make some sort of a puree all by yourself and like that. Purees, I think, a little bit too dense for this. You can decide. But I'm going to use just a regular 10-ounce can of condensed tomato soup. No water to it, just the condensed kind, right? I find that it's really nice. You can also use pasta sauce, but that's a little bit thinner. And I think you could mix a little in with that. But I do think this condensed tomato soup is a good consistency. It's a little, for those of you who might or might not have access to that, it's a little thicker than pasta sauce. Yes, yes. You use pasta sauce too. Preheat to 375. You're going to need a very large skillet. We're going to brown the chicken in the hot oil, right? Turn it around and around until it's pretty much cooked. It's browned evenly all over. We're going to take the chicken and stick it on a nice plate. And we're going to drain off the fat out of our pot. Just leave it so there's some oil in it. Just drain off most of it because you've got a lot of liquid in there. You know that browned chicken that's now sitting on the counter on a plate or whatever it's sitting on? Take the oregano and sprinkle it all over the chicken, right? You need a little bit more, get a little bit more. Nice and crushed the oregano. Make it delicious. Now to our pot, we're going to add the mushrooms, the peppers, the onion. We're going to swiggle them all around for a little bit till they're cooked but not soft, just a little bit so that they smell nice. We're going to take that lovely brown chicken with the oregano on it. We're going to put it back in with the vegetables. We're going to bake the whole thing for about 20 minutes. We're going to cover it and bake it. Yes, I know the sauce isn't on there, and sometimes I forget stuff, but at the moment I haven't. We're going to cover and bake it for about 20 minutes so that the chicken and everything's cooked through and the vegetables are cooked through and everything's nice and yummy. Now we're going to take our tomato soup or our pasta sauce or whatever it is that we're using that's nice and thick. Tomato puree, maybe a little too thick. Yeah, so temper it a little bit. And we're going to put that on the top, bake it for another 10 minutes or so uncovered. We want to know that the chicken is cooked through is what we're doing. And the vegetables look nice. Delicious. You are done. This is an easy recipe. You can actually bake it right in the room if you've got baking facilities. Smells fabulous. Of course, you cut everything. You know, I used to say we could all bake something together, make something together, especially a stir fry. But this, too, if you've got the facilities, you've got the stove and the oven and like that, and you just stick it right in the big skillet into the oven. Which means you don't want a skillet with a huge handle, right? Right. I've got one with two little handles on the sides. This will smell fabulous. You want to pre-cut everything so that everybody doesn't have to watch you slice peppers, right? And chop onions. You want the chicken to remain cold, of course. But you could even make this if your facilities are good enough, and then put it in. It bakes for about half an hour. You could also rewarm this in the oven, and it would smell nice. You could bring it prepped. Don't do it halfway, though. Cook it completely through, cover it, bring it warm, and then maybe even rewarm it. Delicious. Everybody likes it. Personally, I serve it with rice because I have a giant rice cooker. It's the only unitasker that I own, but I like it because I serve a lot of rice. Mm-hmm. Rice on the side. Pasta would be fine. Yes, I know a lot of you vote for mashed potatoes for all kinds of things. Yes, I love mashed potatoes. That would be lovely too. But something good with this that you can put on the side and people can take as much as they like, right? Yeah. Delicious, easy, and that's our safe recipe. My friends, I believe we are now out of time. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on the website. Yes. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.